want you to see, and then we'll look at some others on specific notice. One is in the book of Psalms, chapter 14, it's verse 1, and the other is in the same book, Psalms, chapter 53, and verse 1. This is a statement that is made two times in the Bible. It's made in almost the exact wording in both cases. The fool hath said in his heart, there is no God. They are corrupt. They have done abominable works. There is none that doeth good. And one of those uses the word iniquity instead of abominable works. Done iniquity. Those who reject the existence of God not only reject the Bible, but they also reject some other things. Those of us who were just at the Creation Museum in northern Kentucky saw a lot of evidence along these lines, and I might say that I've had this devotional ready for you for some months, actually, about four. So I say again that those who reject the existence of God not only reject the Bible, they also reject intelligent design and biogenesis, that is, life comes from life. Both the first and second laws of thermodynamics, you heard Dr. Briney talk about that back in May at great length here. All laws of reasonable probabilities. Number five, the evidence found in the fossil record. Number six, irreducible complexity. The first cause and mass ocean, a really big ocean of evidence that supports the concept of God. The idea of God is supported in lots of different places and in a lot of different ways, not only in the Bible by the claims that are made there, but also in the natural world of the Lord, because the Bible and the natural world are in total harmony. I will say that the natural world and what is called science today is not always in total harmony, but the Bible is. So there's no tension between what God says in writing and what you see in the observable world everywhere around you. That's not to mention the fact that they have nothing but speculation void of evidence to support their ideas that there is no God. When people say there's no God, it's just speculation. You say, well, why do you say that? Then they will start the initiative or usually the offensive against the Christian, saying, well, you prove to us why you think there is. Well, as I've told you before, it's a good thing to force them to prove why there isn't. Our position is good, and we have this evidence. They have no evidence for there being no God. They want us to prove there is a God while they do nothing to prove that there is no God. It is God himself who says that people who deny him are absolutely foolish. It's not I'm the one that's calling them that. These two verses that I've read in your hearing here, God said, the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. God said that. I want to first tonight give you a picture of absolute absurdity. An absolute absurdity which was common to most ancient civilizations, most ancient people. This thing that just blows your mind away. I mean, it's so absurd you wouldn't think any intelligent human being could ever fall for it, but they did. So I want to paint it here for you for a moment. A common practice of ancient peoples, cultures worldwide, all over where we've seen in Australia, North America, South America, Central America, all throughout Africa and Asia, the Far East, all throughout Europe, all over the world, even down in Palestine, I mean, the land of Canaan, all over the world, the common practice has been to fashion some sort of God and then bow down and worship the God that you just made. Doesn't that just blow you away? The idea of taking a piece of wood or a piece of gold or silver or any other metallic thing or any other kind of being, to carve it into a statue or some sort of shape. I mean, you made it yourself. You cut it out. You did it. You did all the things. You make it yourself, and then you just turn around and bow down to it and worship it. Say, this is my God. This is what saves me. This is what I'm trusting in right here. I would ask you to turn to the book of Romans, chapter 1, and let me read it to you. It's chapter 1. We're going to start in verse 19. Romans chapter 1 and verse 19. This verse says, because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God hath showed it unto them. Now, if we backed up and connected the context, God saying the existence, his presence, his existence, his handiwork has been shown them. They knew it. I mean, there was one time when Adam and Eve knew God made them, and they knew there was just one God. And then the world fell into all that backsliding and sin, and then came back down to Noah and his wife and the three boys and their wives, eight people, and every one of them knew that God was in this ark thing and that there was a real God. I mean, there was two times when everybody in the whole world knew that there was a real God. But he says here, that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God hath showed it unto them. For the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. And a succinct statement here in verse 20, that what you cannot see, you cannot look with your naked eye and see God face to face. You cannot go up and touch him and feel him, except when he manifests himself in the person of Jesus Christ. But if you went to God in his glorified fashion, you just can't do it. But the things that you cannot see with the natural eye are obvious from the things that you can see. Let me read it again. Being clearly understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, the power of God and the Godhead itself are clearly manifested by the things that are made. What is made? Trees, people, animals, this solar system, this earth, and all these systems that we have here. I mean, these things testify of him, is what's said here, because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Now he begins, Paul does, to describe the downward transition from knowing God to worshiping a stone that you just picked up, or a graven image you just cut out of a piece of wood. How do you get from the true God down here to worshiping an idol? Because a bunch of people have done it through the centuries and all these civilizations. Here's how. Professing themselves to become wise, they became fools. And changed the glory of the uncorruptible God into an image made like unto corruptible man, and to birds and four-footed beasts and creeping things. Wherefore God also gave them up to uncleanness through the lust of their own hearts to dishonor their own bodies between themselves. And I'm not going to read the rest of that chapter, but you would do well to note it, because here the Apostle Paul, under divine inspiration of God, chronicles how that when people turn from the real God to themselves and begin to worship humans and then begin to worship animals and then images of animals and such things, they become unthankful, and it's a downward trip which turns into homosexuality and a whole bunch of other evils that's chronicled right here in this place in your Bible. So a common practice of ancient cultures was to fashion some sort of god and then bow down and worship that god. Gods were commonly made out of gold and silver. Those were the two prime natural elements that were carved or formed into gods, because they're easily shapeable. Look to the Psalm chapter 115. Psalm chapter 115. And I'll read in your hearing verses 4 through 8. Verse 4, their idols are silver and gold, the work of men's hands. You hear that? They have mouths, but they speak not. Eyes have they, but they see not. How do you suppose an idol made out of gold has eyes? The person who formed it put them there. He made them. He got a mouth because the former made him a mouth. It's kind of like a kid sitting down with a pen on a piece of paper or with a piece of paper and drawing a stick figure and putting a nose in there, putting the eyes in there, putting the mouth in there. He put it there. That's how they got him. That's how these gods got him. Gods, and I want to emphasize that. They have ears, but they hear not. And they have noses, but they smell not. They have hands, but they handle not. Feet have they, but they walk not. Neither speak they through their throat. They that make them are likened to them. So is everyone that trusteth in them. Boy, here's God saying, hey, make these gods, put all these pieces to them like a person, and they can't say a word. They can't hear a thing. They can't obey a command. They can't do anything. But yet the person who made this god bows down and worships and says, oh, save me. And the thing can't say anything, let alone save him. Can't do a thing. It's absurd. Also look to the Psalm 135. Psalm 135. Let me read in your hearing, starting with verse 18, and a very similar statement. Psalm 135, verse 18. They that make them are likened to them, so is every one that trusteth in them. Bless the Lord, O house of Israel. Bless the Lord. And then he goes on and says, bless the Lord. But you go back just a little before where he's saying they, they that make them are likened them. It says, again, the idols of the heathen are silver and gold, the work of men's hands. They have mouths, but they speak not. So it's very much a repeat of what we've already seen in this 115th Psalm. You say, well, that's the heathens did that. No. It wasn't just the heathens that did it. The Jews did it. Yeah, they came out of Egypt. Now, you think about this picture. They were captives in Egypt all those years. Finally, God sent Moses and brought them out by a strong hand. 10 notable miracles, like turning sand into lice. Making frogs just spring up all over the land, turning the Nile River into blood. I mean, big time stuff. The biggest being that God brought about the death of the firstborn of all the people down there who didn't have blood sprinkled to their doorpost. God did it. Even after they got out of Egypt, God parted the Red Sea, and the Israelis, roughly 3 million strong, went through on dry ground. The Egyptian army followed right behind them, thought, we just go on through too. And the mud, the ground got boggy and it got muddy and the chariot sunk, and all of a sudden the water rose and drowned the whole army. Pharaoh and his army. They saw it. They hadn't even gone one whole year. Just got past the Red Sea over there on the Sinai Peninsula to Mount Sinai, and Moses goes up to get the commandments of God. And while he's up there, they get restless. And they're saying, Aaron, Moses' brother, make us a god. God, we have a god. I mean, we've seen what he can do to the Egyptians. He destroyed the whole country, and their army included. But Aaron, make us a god. The people of God, these Jews, the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, make us a god. And they brought their jewelry, their rings and some of their jewelry to Aaron, and he fashioned it into a calf. And what did they do? They started having a lewd sexual party, dancing around this calf and saying, you're what brought us out of Egypt. It's absurd. I look at this and I just shake my head. It's just hard to believe. Made a calf out of it. Exodus 32, verses 2, 3, and 4 will tell you that story. Now, ancient societies commonly made gods out of wood, not just of stone or of silver and gold, but look at Isaiah chapter 44. Isaiah chapter 44, and I want to read. I usually don't read this many verses, but I think these are all so related that you need to hear them. So starting in chapter 44 of Isaiah, in verse 9, they that make a graven image are all of them vanity. Crazy. God says it's ludicrous. And their delectable things shall not profit. Well, gods like that can't do anything for you. You know that. And they are their own witnesses. They see not, nor know, that they may be ashamed. Who hath formed a god and a molten graven image that is profitable for nothing? That's right, profitable for nothing. We say out in East Texas, good for nothing. Behold, all his fellows shall be ashamed, and the workmen. They are of men. Let them all be gathered together. Let them stand up. Yet they shall fear, and they shall be ashamed together. The smith with the tongs both worketh in the coals, and fashioneth with hammers, and worketh it with the strength of his arms. Yea, he is hungry, and his strength faileth. He drinketh no water, and is faint. The carpenter stretcheth out his rule. He marketh it out with a line. He fitteth it with planes. And he marketh it out with the compass, and maketh it after the figure of a man, according to the beauty of a man, that it may remain in the house. He heweth him down cedars, and maketh the cypress and the oak, which he strengtheneth for himself among the trees of the forest. He planteth an ash, and the rain doth nourish it. Then shall it be for a man to burn. For he will take thereof, and warm himself. Yea, he kindleth it, and baketh bread. Yea, he maketh a god, and worshipeth, and maketh a graven image, and falleth down thereunto. I know that there's some repetition in what I'm doing here, but as I've been going through the Bible again, and I try to do that at least once a year, it struck me that God just keeps on repeating this idea. I mean, he just keeps on saying it's dumb, it's silly to make an idol and bow down and worship that idol. It's just ludicrous. It's crazy. By the way, the word groves, mentioned right here in Isaiah, I just read, occurs 40 times in the Bible. And it refers to images of wood made to a Phoenician goddess named Asherah. That's the Phoenicians. They moved into that area where Israel was and where the land of Israel is today. And their goddess was Asherah. Ancients would make wooden statues to this goddess, and they would plant them in a forest. I mean, like in rows. Baal, B-A-A-L, Baal, we call him Baal, was the male Phoenician god. And in the plural, statues of Baal were called Baalim. So when you read about Baalim, not the person Baalim, but Baalim, in the scriptures, you're talking about rows of gods. I mean, these people would actually cut out pieces of wood. Kind of like, not near as good as we saw at the museum, but you know how they made these little figures of people and painted them up and made them look so real? Well, they did that, but they did it with knives and carving tools, and they had ways to paint. And they would make these statues to Asherah and to Baal, you know, on a stick. Some of them were taller. And they would stick them down in rows, Baalims. And they would worship them. They had groves in the mountains, groves here and there. And boy, you read the Bible, you hear him talking about the groves. That's what he's talking about. They had these idols up there, and they would go in there and build altars to them and worship these gods that they'd made out of a tree with their own hands. References to Baal occurs 81 times in the scripture. Dagon was the Philistine fish god, and Chemosh was the god of the Moabites, and there were lots of others, but these are the primary ones that are talked about in that particular area. Every ancient culture, as I said, all over the world, has had its gods. Most cultures have had many gods. It's not enough to have one. Most of them had a bunch of them, different names and different types. The Egyptians had lots of gods. They had people they named and have statues on the walls of those palaces down there and those pyramids down there and have these different names, Sepphoris and all these different ones, Isis or Iris. They also worship the river. Big deal for the Egyptians to worship the Nile River. And they worship the sun. And I'm, you know, been out here with my son. He works for the Ute Indians out here in New Mexico and southern Colorado. And I'm just amazed at how hung up they are on the god of the sun. They worship the sun. Big deal. Pretty hard to be a Christian and worship the sun at the same time, you know. But that's how it's been. So it's just a common practice all over the world that people would set up these idols and worship them. The Bible calls them graven images, sometimes calls them idols, sometimes calls them gods, with a little g, of course, not God, little g God. The one true God mocks this concept. I mean, Jehovah says, you're crazy. Don't even think about such a thing. To cut something out of a tree and sit down and worship it, or out of a stone, or out of a piece of metal, you're just, it's idiocy to do that sort of thing. He claims he's the only God there is, and he lists a number of reasons why he can be proven. Creation is just one, Genesis 1:1. Intelligent design, Psalm 19, verses 1, 2, and 3. His miracles in Egypt to those gods to defeat all the Egyptian gods, which were really no gods, Acts 7:36, and many more. And he, God, demands, the real God says, you need to put away all other gods. In the Ten Commandments, he started out, thou shalt have no other gods before me. You ought to bow down to them, you ought to worship them, because they're nothing except the works of men's hands. They cannot save, they can't speak, they can't walk, they can't do anything. So it's crazy, he says. Don't do it, what he tells the Jews, and that's what I say he tells us too, that we shouldn't do. As seen in these verses already cited, God mocks the absolutely absurd idea of worshiping human, handmade, homemade gods. His own people saw his power, yet they still made idols. They still worshiped idols, not just with Aaron there when Moses was up on the mount. But go to the book of Jeremiah. Let me call your attention to chapter 2, Jeremiah chapter 2, starting with verse 26. I'm just going to read three verses here. Jeremiah 2, and in verse 26, as the thief is ashamed when he is found, so is the house of Israel ashamed. They, their kings, their princes, and their priests, and their prophets, saying to a stock, thou art my father, and to a stone, thou hast brought me forth. For they have turned their back unto me, and not their face. But in the time of their trouble they will say, arise and save us. But where are thy gods that thou hast made thee? Let them arise if they can save thee in the time of thy trouble. For according to the number of the cities of thy cities are thy gods, O Judah. God's people, who'd seen all that God had done through the years, had gods in Jerusalem, they had gods in Hebron, they had gods all in the Galilee, all over the cities of Israel to the north till they were taken captive, and then Judah to the south, even after Israel was taken captive. They had all these gods that they were worshiping. And God speaks, the real God, through Jeremiah and says, they had gods, and they said to this God, you're our mother and you're our father. You know, you brought us into the world. And now that these Babylonians are about to take you captive and cut your heads off and your hands off and starve you to death, go get them. Call on them. Ask them to come catch you. I mean, you said they're your God. They'll save you. Now call on them. Let them save you from the Babylonians. Well, you know, they didn't. They couldn't. They couldn't save anybody. So what I'm saying is, here is a picture of absolute absurdity. And I say that because God gives the authority to say it's foolish to believe in a stone or some homemade, handmade, personally fashioned God by your own self or some other human being. They're just nothing. Yet in these modern days, when most people think we are the smartest generation that has ever lived. Every generation seems to think it's smarter than the one before. Seems like all the kids think they're way smarter than their mothers and their dads and their grandparents and all that. That's just the way it is. So in this modern day, when people think we're the smartest generation that has ever existed, throughout academia, I'm talking about throughout A&M and throughout the University of Texas and throughout all this, most of these big schools, throughout science, throughout education as a whole, especially public education, an equally absurd and striking parallel exists right now. We've been talking about back then. You say, well, that's what those crazy people thought. Well, let's talk about some current crazy people. It is commonly believed that no personal knowing God exists. It is commonly and so-called scientifically believed that things, all existing things, spontaneously appeared through some evolutionary process totally apart from any intelligent design or any orchestration. Yeah. It's hard to find people who really believe there's a God. And if you look at some of the polls that are going on, checking how many people in America believe God, it seems like with every generation, the number goes down and down and down. Just kids going to school, they don't believe there's a God. There's no accountability. That's why they kill each other if they can get away with it and steal and, you know, snatch purses and do stuff to old men and old women and stuff like that. Okay. They don't believe it. In this modern age, don't even believe there's a God. And if you don't believe there's a God, you have to say, well, everything that exists just somehow got here accidentally. No, nobody made it. Cosmology is a branch of science that deals with the origin of the universe. We're going to be looking more at that. These people actually believe that the entire ordered universe evolved out of some sort of quantum-type fluctuation out there in a primal state of nothingness and made it into being what it is. Somehow there was nothing, and it just sort of fluctuated. Something that was nothing fluctuated, and it came into being. It's really hard to grasp the concept of something out of nothing. I'll tell you, for me, it's hard to grasp the concept of God making something out of nothing. I can't even fathom that. You know, I have to have materials. Margaret makes a cake or cooks a meal. She has to go to stores. She has to get some flour or sugar or eggs or something to do it with. We've got to start with something. I can't imagine God starting with nothing and making the periodic table, all the elements that we have. I can't imagine him making sand and water, H2O. I can't imagine God making man. I can't imagine him making a brain for an earthworm, let alone for a human. But here these people that don't believe there's a God say that nothing made nothing into something. No God. No, I can understand that if there's a fight and chase, it'd have to be somebody who's smart enough, intelligent enough, that would do it. He could do it. God could do it. But they say, no, there was no God. It just made itself. Just out of nothing. Modern origin of life biochemists believe that dead chemicals, elements, just single chemical elements in a primordial soup, generated complex living cells infinitely against infinitely impossible odds. Can you think of that? Just think how absurd what I'm saying sounds. That chemicals, dead chemicals, somehow in some sort of soup, knowing how the soup got there, except it just made itself, in this soup that all bounced around and eventually became some living something. And that living something grew into something more complex. Many modern physical anthropologists wishfully insist that chimpanzee-like primates were miraculously transmuted into intelligent, spiritual human beings. They just take a population of apes out here, especially chimpanzees, and that somehow, over a period of time, they transmuted upward into human beings. Nobody's out there to help them. Nobody know God, because we don't accept him, of course. It just happened. It just gradually did it on its own. The fact is that true science utterly repudiates every aspect of these impossible fantasies. True science says it had to have an intelligent designer. True science says there's evidence that there wasn't a designer. I mean, there's all kinds of that. The academic scientists who embrace these ideas, these false ideas, have zero evidence to support their claims. They just don't have it. Now, let me end here by talking for a little bit of time about the absurdity of such thinking. I think it is self-evident that it is absurd to think like that. The idea that something can come into existence from nothing is self-contradictory. Within itself, you can see it on the surface. There is not one example of where it has ever happened. Think about that. If it's been doing it, and it somehow did it all along, we ought to see it somewhere, one case in point. No examples, period. Not even one. And it cannot be observed. You cannot demonstrate it, and those three are required for something to be really scientific. But they can't do any of those. But they say, yeah, but this is science and it's true. You just should accept it. To embrace such a position is foolish. It's absurd. The idea that dead chemical elements can somehow spontaneously generate living cells is foolish and absurd also, especially when you have to admit that at that point back there when they did it supposedly, dead chemicals didn't even exist. They say dead chemicals came into something that was alive. I mean, it went from inorganic to organic. But they have to say back then there were no dead chemicals. They weren't there. Somehow they hadn't fluctuated yet. Again, there is not one example of where this ever happened. It can't be observed and it can't be demonstrated. There are no examples, not even one, of a chimpanzee turning into an intelligent, spiritual human being. Demonstrate it. Show us a case. You know, you expect us to believe this imaginary position. Give us some facts. Give us some evidence. In fact, there are no refutable examples of one kind ever evolving into a higher kind. Yes, downward movement, loss of genes and inferior or easier to catch colds, loss of endurance, loss of a lot of things, a tendency to grow cancers easier. Yeah, you see that in dogs as you hybrid them up here and they go downward instead of... But you don't see any case, anywhere in the fossil record, or anywhere in existence today, of this species or kind moving up, 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 up. It's always down, 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 down. Because the second law of thermodynamics talks about all things going from complex to simple. Not from simple to complex, like the other side wants to argue. I'll just give you an illustration. Yesterday I got a call from Ricky Ball. Been knowing him since he was a little kid. His mother is Paula, or was. His dad is Earl. Earl and Paula, when their boys and one daughter were the same age of our kids growing up, we went to Colorado 10 or 12 years on summer vacation. Just kids would play together and we'd fish. And about 10 years ago, 9 or 10 years ago, maybe 11 now, Paula got Alzheimer's and she went down. And for the last 4 or so years, she's not been able to say a word. So yesterday she went to be with the Lord. She went to heaven. Funeral's going to be after tomorrow. Margaret and I, Lord willing, go there tomorrow. And be there on Friday morning out close to Steamville for the funeral service. She's been down there in a home in Stephenville now for, I guess, 9 years or 10. In the last about year, because of her Alzheimer's, she got to where she aspirated, couldn't swallow. So she would try to eat and get choked, try to cough it up, couldn't get it up, began to cause trouble, give her pneumonia. And she'd get over that, and it just got worse because these muscles, the swallowing muscles, had atrophied or gone down to where she couldn't swallow. I remember when my dad had a similar problem up here at Lufkin. We had a speech therapist in. I thought, a speech therapist? Why that? Speech therapists, it turns out, deal with muscles in the throat, swallowing and speaking and such. A lot of the same muscles involved. I was blown away as I began to visit with a speech therapist and find out what a complex matter it is just to swallow one drink of water, just to get it all together where it all works together and it goes down into your stomach instead of down into your lungs or somehow. It is fascinating. I mean, you talk about fearfully and wonderfully made. We are. And that's just swallowing. That's not to mention the arms, the joints, the skin, or the liver, or the stomach, or the colon, or the heart, or the big boy, the brain. It's just the idea that somehow we just accidentally happened. There was no God. There is no God. It's all an invention of man. This God idea is just thought up by some people who were superstitious and they needed some protection. So they found a little protection in the idea of a God. It would take care of them. But there never was a God. There never was a creation. Everything just evolved. No intelligent design. Your stomach just got to be where it was. Your stomach and your liver all work together and your pancreas and all of that stuff. No God. You talk about a ludicrous, absolutely ridiculous concept. It is absolute. We look back at those ancient cultures that had planted a tree, let it grow, cut some of it, maybe harden it in a fire, and then carve it out where it had certain features to it, and give it a nose, and give it some eyes, and give it some ears, and give it some legs, and give it some, and then, you know, carve that thing out like a Dagon, and set him up in a temple down there around Ashkelon, and go down there and fall down on it and say, Dagon, save us from the Jews. And we laugh at them and say, that's a bunch of idiots. I think we got a new generation of idiots. The fool has said in his heart, there is no God. They are all going aside. They are all. It's a matter of denying the evidence. It's right in front of your face. Well, I didn't intend to take so long, but I tell you, I'm glad to say what I said. I got it off my chest, but not all. I'll come back. I assure you, we're going to stay with this. Well, all right. We're going to pray. Please pray for Brother Ball. I mean, even though he knew Mrs. Ball was about to go and time is still, you know, he's immortal just like you, and he hates to give her up. And so he said, she's taught me. I was talking to him yesterday. I called him and I said, I have mixed emotions, Earl, and I did. We were so close to those people for so long that even though I've been seeing this coming and I'd asked God to just free her, I was sitting in my chair working on a sermon when I heard it. And I just had to cry a little bit. I literally did. I couldn't help it. And it's not because I'm worried about where she is or any of that. I just tell you, it's just mixed emotions. So I said, Earl, I know you got mixed emotions. He said, Paula was a really good teacher. She taught me a whole lot about mixed emotions. I hope you can appreciate what he's saying. So pray for him. Pray for the kids, the family that is left.